Steve.
Hey, Emma.
What do you do when you really like something?
You know what I do, Emma? I talk to all my friends about it. What do you do?
That's a great idea, Steve. I even tell strangers on iTunes how much I rate and review it.
What a great idea. Hello, listener, and welcome to yet another episode of the Zeitgeist Tapes, in which me, myself, Stephen Fielding, my co-host, Emma Burnell, say hello, Emma.
Hello, Emma.
That never gets old. And this week, we're joined by Tim Worthington, who is a self-described clangers expert, a contributor to the Doctor Who magazine, and author of Can't Help Thinking About Me, which he has demanded that we mention at least two or three times during the course of this podcast, which apparently it's a really good book. So there you are.
It is a very good book.
It's a very good book. Tim,
and not least because it's dedicated to me.
Is it a very good book, Tim?
I believe it is, but I should just say I'm not actually self-described clangers expert. That was what BBC News called me. And I'm going to say I think the clangers expert was Oliver Postgate. I don't think I can quite take his title.
Well, that was slightly too much information for our listener, I think. But nonetheless, well said, well said. Today, and this is one reason why Tim is on board, today we're going to talk about Doctor Who, and in particular about the new series, of which I've only seen the first two episodes. I don't know about if anyone else has seen more so far. Tim, have you seen into the future?
No, I've only seen the ones that have gone out. I do roughly know what's going to happen in tonight's one at the time of recording because I'm supposed to be reviewing it, but that's as much as I know, and I'm actually quite happy with that, to be honest with you.
Okay. And of course, the most striking feature of this new series is the Doctor's gender, which is not the usual one. She, he, it is a lady Doctor. Which has caused a bit of a kerfuffle for some, in a good way, in a bad way for others. So I just thought, off the bat, we'd just go in and just talk about what our first impressions are of the new series and the new Lady Doctor. Emma, what about you?
Well, I'm very much of the It's About Time school of thought. As I've said on Twitter before, you know, as a little girl, I played the Doctor every Monday in the playground when you rehashed the last episode. So it's great having had done it as a girl. It's great to see a woman doing it. You know, there is, once you have set the precedent that the Doctor can change their body and is not human, then therefore there is literally no reason for the Doctor not to look like any humanoid that they want to, and therefore, you know, it's been very interesting and fun to see that be challenged. I think Jodie Whittaker's doing a great job. I really like her so far as the Doctor. I'm slightly less enamoured with Chris Chibnall's writing on the whole, but I'm sure we can come to that. But so far, so good for me. I'm looking forward to seeing more. I feel excited by it in a way that I haven't done for a little while now. You know, once the excitement of New Who wore off and once I lost David Tennant, who, you know, will always be my Doctor. But this has really sort of injected a new energy, which I'm excited by.
Yeah. I mean, I've got to say, I'm completely neutral about this. I don't really care what the gender of the Doctor is, and they'd prefigured it. I don't know when they started to prefigure the fact that the Doctor, you know, could be a he or a she, but they'd certainly trailed the possibility for quite some time, hadn't they? But for me, the big thing was a Northern Doctor, Christopher Eccleston, apart from her home counties, because it'd all been from the home counties, I think, up to that point. So for me, I really like, he's my favourite Doctor because he's from the North and I'm from the North. So I can see why many women actually are very excited by there being a female Doctor, because it just helps you identify with the character, and there is no reason why the character can't be female. But anyway, I'm going on at length. Tim, what's your take on this?
Well, I've really loved it so far. I mean, it's going to be no secret to, I assume, some listeners that I've brought with me to this one, that there were a couple of years where I wasn't keen on the new series. It just really wasn't for me. It got a bit too self-referential again, wasn't paying attention to the casual viewer. And towards the end of Peter Capaldi's time, that started to improve. And I think this was the exact right moment to bring in a female lead actor, because it's actually reaching out to the kind of people that, well, I'm just going to come out and say this. I'd always wanted a female doctor. I mean, you can find, if you go poking around old fanzines, find articles by me going back as far as the early 90s, sort of arguing for that. And there was famously, when they first said it was coming back and nobody knew anything about it, I wrote a fanzine article saying there should be a female doctor. And weirdly, I think Bella and the Boys had just been on, was it ICV2? But I suggested Billy Piper would be, you know, because that's the direction I thought it should go in. I suggested Billy Piper would be a good doctor, not knowing she's going to be cast in the, you know, the assistant's role in the new series. But I had always wanted that, but with some qualification in that I think there was a danger at some points of it being hijacked, of it being done more to prove a point than to make a good TV programme. And if that happened, if it didn't work as a programme, then everyone lost. Mm. You know, the programme's rubbish. We haven't got anywhere. We haven't achieved anything because it hasn't worked. And people are able to point at it and say, look, it didn't work. But I think this was the perfect moment. And I know that, I mean, I know it's been considered before. I wouldn't be surprised if John Nathan Turner, who was the last producer of the original series, had discussed a female doctor and been sort of turned down at every opportunity, really. I know Russell T Davies thought about it. And I know that just before the Russell T Davies version, there was an attempt to bring it back that nearly made it to being commissioned, which involved people like writers like Mark Gatiss, Gareth Roberts and so on, where they at least mooted the idea of a female doctor. And I don't know if that really figured in their eventual pitch, but, you know, it's interesting they were thinking that. But I think they won't mind me saying at that point, it wasn't the right time to bring it back and it wasn't the right time for a female doctor. But I think now is the exact right moment. And I can't tell you how proud I was that my name was in the issue of Doctor Who magazine that introduced Jodie Whittaker, you know, her first front cover. And it just felt so satisfying to think I've been arguing for this for so long. And hey, look, I'm in there. Yeah, it's all about me, isn't it?
Can't help thinking about you, eh, Tim?
No, it's all about me. It's all about me, surely. I thought everything was about me. Isn't this true? What about you, Emma? Is it all about you as well? Is this terrible? This is a terrible thing. Anyway, I just wondered, because, I mean, I watched the first two episodes back to back yesterday, and it was, I mean, I don't know why I'm not surprised. Am I surprised? Am I not surprised? It was, well, that's a doctor and it's a female. I mean, as far as I was concerned, it made absolutely no difference. And I mean that in a good way. The doctor, I don't see any specific gender thing being said, other than there is nothing being said, and that might be the most relevant thing. I haven't detected any special points in the script or anybody saying anything other than, well, you know, since somebody called a madam, him, it's a madam. But other than that, it's the doctor who just happens to be female. Or am I missing something?
No, I think that is pretty much how they played it. It's just a question of, you know, are you so enamoured of it being a woman that that's all you want to talk about, which, as Tim says, is not the point? Or are you so angry about it being a woman that you cannot see that this is still the doctor? Always has been, always will be. And each doctor has their own particular quirks and their own way of being the doctor. But the point is that there is always a level of continuity as well as a level of change. And I think they've managed that really well.
Yeah. That's what I think. I mean, what about you, Tim? Have you, in terms of the transition, as it were?
Well, I mean, I was expecting there to be more comment on it, admittedly in, you know, terms of throwaway jokes rather than anything profound or preachy. But I actually think it's completely the right thing, that it's just going to wrong for a lot of people who, you know, are violently opposed to the idea, despite having no actual interest in him. And I had to say to somebody from my, in inverted commas, real life recently, he was mouthing on to me about why they thought it should be a female doctor. And this particular person, who happily won't be listening to this, but they've never had any interest in it. They've belittled the idea that Doctor Who magazine exists, that sort of thing. And I had to say, I'm sorry, you actually don't have a say about this. And if we're not handing any sort of ammunition to that kind of argument, then that's all the better, really. I think it's been played absolutely perfectly.
I thought, actually, the most striking thing about those first two episodes was the setup for the companions, and in particular, the relationship between the Bradley Walsh character, I can't remember any of their names because it's far too early, and the grandson of the woman he married, who subsequently dies, and their relationship, the fact being Bradley Walsh is white, and in the series he was married to a black woman, and her grandson has got problems accepting him as his, you know, grandfather or anybody in his life, and I'm not quite sure how that's going to play out. Whether it's mostly because he's his grandmother's second husband, and there's that, or the fact that he's white, and I think actually that's probably a more interesting, I mean, albeit a subplot. Mm. About what they're going to say about race and attitudes in Britain now, and also more broadly, because the third companion is Asian. That this is are they saying something? I mean, I sometimes read things far too crudely. Are they saying something about this is Britain today, a multicultural little family led by a lady? And they're all getting on together. Just about, there are tensions, particularly, you know, between the Bradley Walsh character and his step grandson. But we're all combining. We're better together. And I think she actually says that or something like that at some point. And is something being said that's actually beyond the fact that the Doctor just happens to be in this particular series a woman?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think the politics of race and identity and Sheffield seem to be coming very clearly through. You know, the whole relation to the steel was, you know, very, very regionally specific, but it was interesting and it was fun and it was well done. And I think that what they've managed to do is combine building a gang instantly. So it's not one companion, which is interesting. It's a different approach to how we saw it on most other new doctors, just had the one person. So Peter Capaldi had Clara, Matt Smith had Amy, and then had Rory, but he had Amy first, and Amy was clearly the companion, and Rory was the companion's companion. David Tennant had Billy Piper, as did Christopher Eccleston. That slightly badly put, but there you go. This is a gang immediately. They are a supportive gang. There to be three different companions, all equal in weight in their relationship to the Doctor, and I think that's a really a new dynamic that I'm keen to see them play with a bit more. And you're right, you know, there are tensions within that and interesting interplay within that. So they've all got pre-established relationships. So the two younger ones went to school together,
but the female character has done more, hasn't she? She's become a policeman, whereas the male character is doing an MVQ,
something like that. It's a new setup. It's a good setup. And I thought particularly in the second episode that came through a lot stronger. Obviously, in the first episode, it's always so difficult because you're just establishing characters. And the lovely grandma character, who clearly had to go because she was far too much like the Doctor. She was too take charge, I think, to be a companion. But she was a great sort of one-off character.
Tim, what do you think?
Well, I'm actually really interested in, as you say, the differing dynamics between the new characters. It's something that's not really been done before. I mean, quite often the companion stroke, assistant stroke, whatever, you know, you end up calling them, they're just people that have been flung together in a situation. And quite often they're not even really depicted as friends. You know, there've been a couple, despite people thinking it was only ever Amy and Rory, there've been a couple of couples where it wasn't really elaborated on. In fact, famously, Ben and Polly, who were on a date when they got involved with the Doctor and the war machines, that's never really touched on again. They're in this really confined space together and nothing much is said about it. And at the other extreme, you know, you've got Amy and Rory wouldn't bloody shut up about what schools their children might get into if they had any. But the only other thing that's really been tried, I think I'm right in saying, was there was Tegan and Nyssa with Peter Davison, who were kind of depicted occasionally as, in inverted commas, girly mates. You know, there was a bit of an indication they might have done each other's hair, you know, that sort of thing. But even that wasn't really explored in the kind of way it could have been, you know, that could have added an extra layer of interest to a whole different audience. And I think this is quite a good and a bold move that, you know, you've got the whole weird dynamic between, well, with Bradley, well, but the fact the other two went to school, you know, that's it's just almost completely new, really.
I wondered, I mean, for some reason, and maybe it's because I'm an old white guy, but the Bradley Walsh character, I thought, was possibly more amongst the most interesting kind of innovations, really, because he is an old white guy, and he's kind of like representative, at least in my mind, you know, being a bus driver, retired bus driver, kind of left behind, kind of a character. I mean, I'm not saying he was, he fits that, but certainly within, although he's not from Sheffield, but he's living in Sheffield, and references to steel, which is a kind of a left behind industry. Mm. And then he's located in this wider little family with his, you know, he's got his own little multiracial family himself due to marriage. I just wondered if they're quite deliberately saying something about an alternative kind of Britain at this moment of, I was going to say crisis, and why not, of moment of crisis, that it's, in its own way, it's pointing to a lovely possible Britain of a slightly different sort with a female doctor kind of in charge. Or am I being too fanciful?
No, I think this is very clearly post-Brexit Doctor Who, isn't it? You know, all of the themes in it are those themes of both the kind of this is why we Brexited, left behind UK, and also, well, you know, we may be Brexiting, but we still believe in our liberal values, Doctor Who-ness. So I think there's, yeah, that is, I have found, I mean, and what I was saying about the Chris Chibnall stuff, yeah, I do find some of the dialogue a bit on the nose when it comes to some of this. So the bit where she just quite clearly goes, and we're stronger together, and it was like, oh, okay. Yeah, I get the point, but maybe you could make it a little bit more subtle. You know, there's nothing wrong with a bit of subtlety in writing. And I think that's where Russell T. Davis, for me, was just, I mean, he wasn't always subtle. The 42 seconds joke in the Slitheen episodes that I think we're going to come on to discuss later, you know, were not subtle, but they were jokes rather than kind of, you know, emotive moments. And I think that's where the difference is.
Yeah, Tim, are there any precedents, or am I, you know, because there was the Bernard Cribbins character, wasn't there, kind of briefly in previous series, as I'm talking about white old man. But do you think something is being said?
I think so. I mean, there's never really been that much of a precedent. I mean, Tom Baker famously always tried to argue that the companion should be an old lady because he thought that would be the most interesting thing dramatically and what he could play against best. But
yeah,
that was always treated as a joke, really, until, you know, recently people would use it in articles as kind of like, you know, a point about Tom Baker's eccentricity. But I think he was absolutely deadly serious. And, you know, it is better to break out of that and not just with a, you know, a robot dog, or as they tried up in the 80s, an inverted commas real robot, you know. Looking beyond the boundaries of, you know, young, and I include John Barrowman in this, you know, sort of young, attractive, you know, dynamic people, is really a good step, I think.
But Doctor Who's always been a little bit political. I think this second iteration, I mean, I don't know about the, you know, the first batch, as it were, that ended so sadly with, was it Sylvester McCoy in the end? That that first iteration, there were bits of politics in it, but I think that was sometimes a question of writers putting things in that they weren't supposed to, or it was done on the side or whatever. But ever since it's been rebooted, hasn't Doctor Who had a very, it's had an ethos, hasn't it? A kind of left liberal ethos, which I'm quite surprised, but maybe people have on the right have been banging on about it. I just haven't noticed. I'm quite surprised that it's really taken the Doctor to become a woman for things to kick off, at least as far as I've noticed it. But it's been very, hasn't it been really quite biased, the ethos and in some of the particular stories?
What's fascinating to me is how all these people who are so worried that Doctor Who is becoming too politically correct now seem to have missed all of the gay storylines. Or does that matter less than women? I mean, it's just fascinating in terms of the hierarchy of offence.
All right, yes.
Well, I can throw in from sort of an actual Doctor Who fandom perspective that, you know, there is this odd idea that it is hard left and always has been. And that there are, when I say right-wing Doctor Who fans, I don't mean, you know, they're goose-stepping down the street saying, you know, hail the Candyman or whatever, but there are people I know who, you know, I would say are conservative voters, you know, that side of the fence, who they agree with people on my side of the fence, often quite publicly on Twitter, that it's always been against what's bad. There's never been a definable stance that it's really taken, really. And to me, that's quite an important thing. I mean, all of them, I would say, they didn't have a problem with the female Doctor at all. They were like, yeah, bring it on. It's the fringes on both sides that seem to have some weird investment in it. I mean, I'm not going to name names here, but if you've heard a recent edition of Richard Herring's, well, it wasn't in Leicester Square, but his guest was Toby Haydoke, who's quite a, you know, well-known and respected Doctor Who fan, was saying that part of the problem is that there's now a kind of sense of ownership among people who he'd never heard mention Doctor Who before it came back, and, you know, would mock him for it sometimes, and suddenly they're kind of trying to steer its direction, and I'm getting into waters where I can't really, you know, I don't want to make a comment as such, but I think there's something in that. I think it's been driven possibly on both sides by an ideology that's not there. People pining for a golden age that didn't exist, that never did, and people wanting almost to weaponize it on the other direction. Is any of that making sense? Or you guys are the political experts.
Well, I don't know if it. You're making it sound like, I mean, you're the Doctor Who expert, so you know all the texts in and out. But from my reading of it, it's not so much a nostalgia, but a hope and aspiration for everyone to be nice to each other, in, you know, whoever you happen to be, you know, whatever you happen to be.
Well, I meant more in the other direction. The people that are saying, you know, it's gone all PC, blah 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 blah.
Oh,
you know,
sorry, right, yeah.
Looking back to something that never really happened, it quantifiably wasn't the case. And
right,
you know, they probably say, you know, oh, I used to watch Bod with PC Plod, and you say, no, it's PC Copper. No, I remember, I should know, I used to watch, you know, that sort of thing. People construct their own memories to back up what they think, and when it's easily disprovable, that's not a
well,
good
older people. Certainly, I don't know how old these people are that you're talking about, but certainly older people like to have a sense of things were more certain in the past, and they don't like things not being binary. And so when you do get a Doctor who is no longer, you know, a man, and when you've got all the fluid sexualities that have been prefigured, you know, all the way through this latest second iteration, I think that must make some of them a bit uncomfortable. And particularly when they can remember, you know, it was just old men shouting at assistants in short skirts, and that was great, apparently.
No, I mean, I think that there is a misplaced sense of nostalgia amongst the audience rather than, and I think the Russell T. Davis onwards has done rather well is straddle the rewards for long-term fans. So here are some references to things that only you guys will get. And isn't that sweet and lovely? So when the Doctor eats jelly babies, for example, that's a very distinct reference back to Tom Baker's Doctor. There's a moment in a Later Who where one of them's watching the Teletubbies, which again is a reference back to a time when the Doctor was watching the Clangers. Tim, you should recognise this. Yeah, these are like little nuggets, little Easter eggs that reward fans. But they've always straddled that with bringing in a new audience, making sure a new audience is reintroduced to the Daleks, to the Cybermen, to you know, your various historical races that the Doctor has fought, and brought on brand new and interestingly scary baddies like the Weeping Angels is a great example, for example. So I think that New Who has always straddled that sense of nostalgia with a sense of future possibilities. And I think that the bringing in of the female Doctor, which frankly was inevitable as soon as they made the Master a woman, I think, you know, that for some people has gone too far into the future possibilities. But, you know, Doctor Who is a sci-fi show. It is all about future possibilities. Even when he goes into the past, what he does is go into the past with a future outlook. You know, so, and the morality and the ethos of the times in which he's living. And those times are, you know, several thousand years ahead of ours. So, you know, this is what the show has always been about, politically, in terms of its liberal values. It's never really had a different outlook. It may have reflected the slightly different liberal values of the late 60s and then the 70s and then the 80s, but it's always had that ethos.
Has it? I started watching it when I was a kid, and all I can remember is being scared of the Daleks, like most kids do. But so I don't really remember anything about the. And this may say something about the nature of the audience at the moment today. That as a kid, I just remember all the adventures and the Doctor and things happening, but not a subtext of liberality. Whereas as an adult. From Christopher Eccleston onwards, I've been very aware of that, and I've been very aware of what Doctor Who was doing, sometimes in a very clunky, exaggerated way that made me go a little bit, you know, what? Ooh, I mean, I know what you're doing, but I wish you'd done it a bit better. But so I just want, you know, obviously, I don't think many of the kids watching it today would probably be aware of this liberality. But has it always been liberal, in the sort of left liberal in the way that it is now?
It's kind of varied over time, but even if you go back to the very first series, 1963-64, I mean, even sidestepping the fact that the William Hartnell Doctor, there's this weird idea now that he was racist and sexist, and that isn't borne out by, you know, what's actually on screen at all. But, you know, you've got two of the companions, there's Barbara, who's a school teacher, who I think is supposed to be about 29, 30, and the Susan, the Doctor's granddaughter, who they dominate a lot of the screen time with conversations that do pass the Bechdel test. And it's interesting that in the first real, as Emma was just saying, the first real forays back into the past, there's the one where they meet Marco Polo, where Susan has a long conversation with one of Marco Polo's retinue, Ping Cho, who's on her way to an arranged marriage. And Susan kind of judging it by modern standards, and Ping Cho saying, well, don't you understand? I'm quite happy with this. I don't understand why you're upset. I'm going to a great life, you know, that. And that's kind of saying, you know, that's how it was then. This is where we are now. And similarly in the Aztecs, a couple of stories later, Barbara's absolutely horrified by the idea of human sacrifice and tries to stop them doing it and change history. Sorry, I'm all over the place. Change history, and the Doctor's sort of, well, you can't do that. That's their culture, and that's how it is. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, even from the start, I mean, don't forget, the first ever producer was a young woman, Verity Lambert, who would have been in her mid-20s at the time, I think. And there have been periods where it wasn't quite as, should we say, wasn't quite as right on all of the time, but overall, I think that's definitely been the case.
Yeah. Well, I suppose, I mean, I mean, I think think you like you said, science fiction as a genre can be a bit more adventurous in certain things. And obviously, there's the infamous or famous kiss between Uhura and Captain Kirk in Star Trek in the 60s. But I wondered, as a kind of like final thing, in terms of the overt politics, you know, the kind of politics with the capital P kind of thing, in terms of Doctor Who, because I've thought, I mean, again, as an adult watching it, I don't know what the kids would be picking up on, but certainly during the Iraq War and Tony Blair's later years as Prime Minister, it got pretty close. If not, it went beyond close to being very explicitly anti the Iraq War, and certainly with Harold Saxon, who was, you know, he was the master, being Tony Blair. I mean, in effect, becoming Prime Minister, brainwashing people who everybody likes him, but they've all been brainwashed. And then the last week of Tony Blair's premiership that had been, you know, announced some time in advance, they showed the episode of Harold Saxon, you know, the Prime Minister, brainwashed everybody. We used to like him, now we don't know why. And it obviously turns out to be a you know, he's the master. So I just wonder what you think about the direct politics of Doctor Who, and whether is it legitimate? I mean, if I was on the right, I'd be thinking, should they be doing this?
Well, if you're on the right, you'd love the way they treat Churchill. I mean, yeah, there's no questioning of any of Churchill's other bits of legacy. It's all just, my God, he won.
Other than introducing the Daleks.
yeah. But, you know, I don't think he really introduced the Daleks so much as used the Daleks to his own ends.
That's true. No, you're absolutely right with Churchill. Churchill is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, they don't look at any of his legacy in India.
But there's also, Harold Saxon is kind of balanced out by the character that gets forgotten, the Prime Minister who deposed, Harriet Jones, who was quite based on Thatcher in some regards, but got the chance to argue back about some things. I mean, there was the, you know, when the Sycorax ship was turning away, you know, that's a very obvious Belgrano reference that they fire on it, although there's still, you know, a 45-minute claim reference hidden in there, so it's not as muddled as all that. But, you know, it's painted as an evil thing, but she gets the chance to have a speech saying, you know, they would have gone, they would have told people about us, and this would have happened again and again and again. It's never as clear cut as all that.
That was murder.
That was defence. It's adapted from alien technology. A ship that fell to Earth 10 years ago.
But they were leaving.
You said yourself, Doctor. They'd go back to the stars and tell others about the Earth. I'm sorry, Doctor, but you're not here all the time. You come and go. It happened today. Mr. Llewellyn and the Major. They were murdered. They died right in front of me while you were sleeping. In which case, we have to defend ourselves.
Britain's golden age.
It comes with a price.
I gave them the wrong warning. I should have told them to run as fast as they can. Run and hide, because the monsters are coming. The human race.
Those are the people I represent. I did it on their behalf.
And I should have stopped you.
What does that make you, Doctor? Another alien threat?
Don't challenge me, Harriet Jones, because I'm a completely new man. I could bring down your government with a single word.
You're the most remarkable man I've ever met. But I don't think you're quite capable of that.
No, you're right. Not a single word. Just six.
I don't think so.
Six words.
Stop it.
Six. Don't you think she looks tired?
So Tim, I mean, as you say, that what we've just heard was, yeah, quite clear Belgrano references. And Harriet Jones is an interesting character, because she goes from being a completely anonymous backbencher to Prime Minister in a few short steps.
Yeah, it's, you know, and she is given a full kind of arc, and she gets to redeem herself in her very last appearance when she actually says, "I don't matter," when I think Jack Harkness says, you know, "What's going to happen to you?" Mm. You know, in terms of saving the world, she's like, "Well, yeah, I don't matter." I personally wouldn't have ever seen Margaret Thatcher saying that, but that's by the by. But it's always more complicated than people think. I mean, the one that gets held up from the original run was a story from 1988 called The Happiness Patrol, where people focus on as a brilliant, more or less an impersonation of Margaret Thatcher by Sheila Hancock in this, you know, sort of dystopian future where everyone's got to be happy all the time or else. But if you actually look at the story, there's explicit references to Sun City and, you know, the whole apartheid issue, Argentina, the USSR. There's a whole thing about politicians laughing at their own jokes. There's what's more or less a fugitive Nazi, even if he is a giant man made of sweets. And at the time, that was still very topical. There's state propaganda. There's nuclear attack bunkers for VIPs. And it is always just these people are bad, full stop, rather than, you know, so come and be on my side.
So there's no real pattern, is what you're saying, to the politics of Doctor Who. It kind of goes one way or another, and everybody's kind of referenced and criticised or praised. There's nothing. There's no agenda, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I'd say it's at its best when it takes a stand rather than taking a side. And sometimes there is an agenda about things like pollution, maybe, and so on. But it's the same kind of agenda you get in something like The Goodies. It's not explicit propaganda. It's an issue, and here's what I feel.
I'd say there's an agenda on pollution. There's an agenda on sexuality. They definitely, the whole kind of, when Billy Piper is like, but Jack's flirting with both of us, and Doctor Who's like, yeah, totally, he's from the future. That just like, no one cares anymore.
Yes, yeah.
And definitely, I think pollution, right way back to the 70s, I'm thinking of the storyline where Joe left, Joe Grant. I mean, that was a quite heavily environmental message, if I remember rightly, Tim.
Yeah, the Green Death, that was, yes. Basically about pollution creating giant maggots, then became giant flies.
Yeah.
Although the interesting thing about that is that capitalism isn't the enemy in that. It's people not checking what's happening. It's, you know, that I think that's quite an interesting point that gets missed about it.
Mm.
Is that, you know, there's a computer and nobody really checks on what the computer's doing.
Yeah, no, I think there is. If Doctor Who is anything, he's a centrist dad, or now a centrist pop.
Or mum.
Well,
yeah, he's not. He doesn't like extremes. The one thing that Doctor tends to rail against is extremes
and violence.
Yes.
Well, that does bring me back to something that was weirdly ahead of its time without meaning to be, which was the episode with Starship UK, the Matt Smith one, where the whole of Britain's gone off in this big spaceship because it's not inhabitable anymore. There's a, you know, storyline in that about Liz Ten, who's the queen by that point, has to regularly make a choice of whether to, it's abdicate and forget, two buttons, you know, an either-or choice about whether they should keep piloting it fueled by this tortured space whale. And Amy rumbles it. The really weird thing is, the man in the video explaining it to Amy has a very sort of familiar beard and hairstyle.
You think it's Corbin? Not in 2010, it wouldn't be.
He looks extremely like him. It really is quite alarming.
I mean, what was interesting about that episode is it shows the dangers of referendums years before we had any of the really divisive referendums in this country. You know, if we'd only listened to Doctor Who.
But that makes your point about Doctor Who being centrist dad. Doctor Who isn't centrist dad. He's against things like that. Even if, you know... he's now a lady doctor. And so where do we think, you know, briefly, where do we want this doctor and this present crowd to go? Can we anticipate the doctor going in new directions, or is it going to be the same old liberal centrist, interesting, maybe slightly clunky points? Are there any hopes for any innovations further than the doctor being a lady?
I sort of hope not, really. I think the point is that the doctor is the doctor. Let's go off and have whiz bang adventures in our slightly liberal, slightly centrist sort of a way. Because if you change it too much, then that will sort of kind of go, oh, well, it has to be different because it's a woman. It's like, no, it doesn't. That's the whole point.
Well, yeah, it's right back for me to my very first point, which was it has to, above everything else, just be a good programme, be something that my mum and dad are watching it at the moment. They never watched Doctor Who, even when there were four of us, you know, glued to it. You know, And that to me is quite amazing, really.
Well, it's a while since I've seen it, because I got really bored and hacked off with the Doctor at various points, so I stopped watching it. And so the last two episodes were the first I've seen for a while, and I just left it feeling quite cozy. It was like, oh that's nice. And I don't know whether that's now because it's on Sunday, or it's really always been like that, or it's because the Doctor.
It's a revolutionary act to be nice these days.
Absolutely, I didn't mean that to be at all critical. I actually meant that as something that was itself nice. So
absolutely.
I don't know whether it's because the Doctor is a lady now, or it's the writing, or because it's all so horrible outside the Doctor, who, even though, you know, is constantly on the verge of being destroyed and their companions being killed, is compared to all of that, is a cosy watch. I don't really know, but and clearly, you know, Tim knows far more than anybody, and he knows that we've really only scratched the surface here. So thanks for him to participate. And just to remind our listener that he is indeed the author of Can't Help Thinking About Me, which is apparently, he says, very worthwhile buying. And just to say, this has been a political human production. To thank Lord Stuart Wood for our theme tune. And what are they meant to do now? Or what's our listener meant to do now, Emma? I always forget.
They're supposed to rate and review us. They need to rate and review us on iTunes or wherever it is that they get their
podcasts. Rate and review. So thanks, Emma.
Thank you.
And thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
Thank you to our listener. Goodbye.